Welcome to Parents' Perspective. See that statue over there, son? Carl motioned to 5-year-old Kevin. That's one of the largest equestrian sculptural groupings in the world. Kevin looked puzzled.
What's equestrian?
He wrinkled his nose. His dad smiled. That's a fancy word for horses. Kevin nodded as they walked closer to the imposing group of bronze figures. Now these are all soldiers, Carl began. They fought in the bloodiest battle in our country, the Civil War. And right in the center, they both craned their necks, is the general of the Union Army, the army that won. His name is Ulysses S. Grant, he finished with a flourish. Kevin stood quietly, staring up at the mammoth figures of horse and rider. That's a war a lot of people like to study, Carl mused. Some even dress up and pretend to fight its battles. There's an exhibit on the Civil War in the museum we just passed. Maybe you'd like to have a look.
Hey, Dad.
Kevin was still entranced with the statues towering above him.
Yes, Carl responded. Do you have a question?
Dad, who's that guy riding on General Grant?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about taking kids sightseeing? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has years of experience sightseeing with children. Anthony S. Pitch has taken countless families with children 7 and older on private tours of Washington, D.C. over a number of years. He's the author of numerous books, including The Burning of Washington, The British Invasion of 1814, a selection of the History Book Club, winner of the Arlene Custer Memorial Prize for Best Book from the Mid-Atlantic Regional Archives Conference, and recipient of the Maryland Historical Society's Annual Book Award. In his most recent publication, Pitch is a contributing author to The Resilient City, How Modern Cities Recover from Disaster. He has appeared on C-SPAN TV, The History Channel, National Public Radio, Voice of America, Fox News, the British Broadcasting Corporation, TV2 Denmark, and TV New Zealand. A prolific public speaker, Anthony Pitch is a former journalist in England, Africa, and Israel. He is a former Associated Press broadcast editor in Philadelphia and a senior writer in the books division of U.S. News and World Report. And he has 2 adult children and 2 young grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Tony.
Thank you for having me.
What's the biggest mistake adults make when sightseeing with kids?
Probably to underestimate the intelligence of the children. I have been so amazed at the way they react. Generally, I ask them after a tour, what was the best thing you did or saw? I took a family of 3 children around Washington for 2 days. When we got to the Holocaust Memorial Museum, the mother, who was a former teacher, said, I'll keep the 5-year-old daughter here, and I'll tell her about it. We'll get a book and I'll tell her. You go and see the permanent exhibition. We did. 2 hours later, we came down. She had gone through the book with her daughter, and she'd taken her through Daniel's story, which is a simplified version of the Holocaust, especially designed for young children. At the end of those 2 days, I asked the 3 children, what was the best thing you did? And a 5-year-old said, the Holocaust Memorial Museum. Now, who could have possibly foreseen that? That's testament to the brilliance of the mother, who must have explained it so well. And this child absorbed it to such an extent that it beat out the White House, the Capitol, the changing of the guard at Arlington National Cemetery. So don't underestimate the intelligence and the emotional reaction of the children.
What's the most important thing adults should remember?
That children have to have a break for food and drink. Because if you go on and on, I've had tours that go on for 10 hours a day, they cannot absorb, they cannot concentrate beyond a certain amount of time. However interesting the stories might be or the sights may be compelling, you cannot hold their attention for that long without a break for food and drink and something totally relaxing, unconnected to what the tour is about.
How would you recommend that families take that break?
Well, they can either stop by for a fast food, a hot dog or something at a tourist site, or choose a place where there are plenty of people, like in Washington at Union Station, thousands of people milling around, so they can feel the excitement of these multitudes while munching. But they have to have that break.
What about finding playgrounds?
I don't think that figures so much in my tours. In Washington, we have a famous statue called The Awakening. It's a giant rising up from the ground, and the kids love to run up and down the separated limbs, the legs 20 feet away from the arms, and that kind of thing. That's a thrill.
In your experience, what do kids gravitate to most when visiting a new place?
In my experience, is the story that you're telling. I can grab any child from probably 7 and older. I know before I've started, I can have that child in the palm of my hand because it's a process of experience. If you tell a story that is so dramatic, it doesn't matter if that kid is academically inclined or not, or emotionally inclined, they will react to a compelling story. And I'll give you an example. If I take them to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, it's a very solemn, compelling wall with all the names of the 58,000 plus men and women who died in the Vietnam War. Now, to look at that for an adult is compelling. A child, many of the children I see, they're giggling and chatting as they walk by. If I tell them a story, I can get them so entranced that they will forget everything else while they're listening to my story. And here's one of the many, many that I tell. A few weeks ago, I was at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial with a family of two children and the parents. It was getting dark, coming to the end of the tour, when I saw at the base of the wall people leave things. This was a photograph with a letter attached to it. I read it. It was so dramatic, but I didn't have time to copy it, and I didn't have pencil or paper. We ended the tour. I took them back to their hotel. I live 20 miles north of Washington in Maryland. I got back and I thought to myself, if I don't drive back and copy down what I saw, I'll lose it forever because the rangers, the park rangers, pick everything up at the end of the night and they warehouse them and you seldom see anything again. I drove 20 miles back with a flashlight. It hadn't been picked up yet. It was a photograph of a puppy and attached to it was a note. Above is a photograph of the puppy you owned in Vietnam in 1967. She would go and look for you on the return of every aircraft. We couldn't make her understand that you were not coming back after your plane crashed with the loss of your life. The men in your platoon took good care of her. Hopefully, the good Lord has reunited both of you in heaven. And then he wrote the name, Vaughn Hines. And he wrote the number of the panel. All the panels on that Vietnam Veterans Memorial have a number. This is 29E. And it said line 50. So I show them, I count down 50 lines, and I point to Vaughn Hines. And I say, look, here is one of 58,000 plus names of those who died in the war. He is no longer just a sandblasted name. Now you know something of how he affected his friends. This friend held the letter for 40 years. 1967, the photograph was taken. He then came on a pilgrimage to that wall, and he left it there, the only place where it could have full meaning.
And how wonderful that you saw it and copied it.
And the adults cry when I tell that story. It's a recent story, but it has the same effect all the time. And the children are mesmerized. So that's proof positive. If you have a story to tell and you can tell it well, you've got those children exactly where you want them. They will go back to their hometowns and they will remember that, hopefully for a very long time.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on sightseeing with kids.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents,
by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with tour guide and author Tony Pitch about sightseeing with kids. What's the best way for adults to prepare for a sightseeing visit with kids?
I would imagine telling them the basics about the city where they're going to. Show them a map, where it is on the map. In the case of Washington, D.C., explain that it is the capital of the nation, that it represents all the states through the congressmen and senators. Something that will prepare them for the fuller story that's coming from the guide, if they have a special guide.
Now, if you're going to a city that's unfamiliar to you, how do you decide how to hire a guide? How would you do that?
Most people who hire me, it's word of mouth or through the internet. Like anything else, if you're picking a theater to see, I've just come back from vacation in London. We did preparatory work on reviews for what theater. We asked around the people selling the tickets what they could recommend, a process of eliminations, and I think it's the same with who you're going to hire.
If you're going to a city that's unfamiliar to you and you don't know anybody there, would it be wise to ask a concierge at a hotel?
Yes, the concierges are the best resource. It's their job to keep on top of everything. And the better hotels will have the veteran concierges, which means that they know their stuff. And there are other possibilities to phone the Convention and Tourism Association if they have one, the Chamber of Commerce, the local Chamber of Commerce. They will be familiar with who is promoting their city or their town and who has excelled. So recommendations are coming from those kind of people would be a very good way to go about it.
I can vouch for that. The only time I've ever traveled with a guide, a personal guide, was in Israel when we took my children. And it made all the difference in the world for my children because, number one, he could answer any question they had, and he could tell them stories about anything they wanted to have stories about know about that we couldn't do.
That's
we just wouldn't be as well equipped to do that. It was an enormously rewarding experience for us.
Yes.
And three of our friends have used that guide since
really?
We did. Yeah. And it was word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that occurs to me when you're preparing for going to a city that you don't know a whole lot about is I would think if you go on the internet to find any children's books that would have to do with that city, that might be a good preparation as well.
Yes, that, obviously that's a good idea. Books, they would stimulate the parents' curiosity and the children's mm-hmm. curiosity. That would be a very good way of doing it also, to go on the internet for books.
Are there certain kinds of sites that are especially appealing to younger kids, middle school kids, teenagers?
I don't think that there are special sites. My example of the 5-year-old who reacted to the Holocaust Memorial Museum shows that you can't stereotype these children. They all react differently. I took around the great-grandchildren of one of the wealthiest families in the world. The funnest time they had was nothing I told them or showed them. It was when we got to the Tidal Basin, which is a stretch of a man-made lake in front of the Jefferson Memorial in Washington. It had rained a lot that week. The water overflowed the banks. Those great-grandchildren took off their shoes and socks and they ran through the mud. And that was their highlight of a visit to Washington. I couldn't compete with that.
But I'm glad you were a good sport about it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I know when I'm beaten.
Can you suggest any tips on keeping restless youngsters happy and focused besides the obvious take a break every so often?
Yes. The thing is not to get into excruciating detail with children. I've listened to tour guides inside the U.S. Capitol go on and on about specific paintings or murals or frescoes. That can kill a story. They're not interested in that. They would much rather, if you're pointing to a painting As I sometimes do in the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, I point to a painting of the baptism of Pocahontas, the Indian woman. And there's an Indian, a Native American, sitting on the right-hand side of the canvas facing you. And if you look at the left foot, he's got six toes. Now, children would relate to that. If, for instance, we stop in front of the National Archives, we haven't got time to line up with others for an hour in the crowded summer months. I will tell a story that I told on the History Channel that very, very few people know. And it grabs the children immediately. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are in the National Archives because of one man. One man. As the British Army approached Washington in 1814, the Secretary of State was James Monroe. He later became president. And he scribbled a note to the State Department where these documents were kept at that time in 1814. And he said, save the documents and the precious departmental records. One of the clerks, Stephen Pleasanton, hurried to buy coarse linen, which he cut into bags, and into these he and others very gently put the original copies of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, George Washington's correspondence, international treaties. And while he was doing this, the Secretary of War passed by, and he rebuked him for thinking the British were on their way to Washington. He said, they're going to Baltimore. This man, Stephen Pleasanton, was not intimidated. He said it's more prudent to try and protect these documents from the Revolutionary War. So he loaded them into carts. He drove 2 miles above Washington, put them in an abandoned mill, had second thoughts, it's too close, a spy could lead the enemy there. So he went 35 miles west to Leesburg, Virginia, put them in an empty house, locked the door, gave the key to the sheriff, checked into a hotel. That night, the British Army burned the White House. The next day, they burned the State Department, where those documents would have been stored. So Stephen Pleasanton, one man who's buried in a cemetery in virtual anonymity, a quarter of a mile behind the U.S. Capitol, saved the documents. Now, that story will linger with children for years to come. Rather than taking them into the National Archives, lining up for a long time with other tourists, and then having to whiz by quickly. It's the story that grabs the children.
Much as you love history,
yeah.
I would imagine sometimes you have to hold back what you'd really like
to
share.
Oh, yes, yes. In front of the White House, I won't tell children details of the stonemasons coming from Scotland, because we didn't have any stonemasons here at that time. They'd far much rather hear about this open-air swimming pool behind the Oval Office, which is surrounded by trees to keep it away from public view. And one day there was a shriek. This is when the current president's mother, Barbara Bush, was living in the White House. She went for a swim. There was a shriek, and the Secret Service agents went running, and they found a live rat in the pool.
Oh my.
Now, they'll relate to that.
Yes,
now,
sure.
The children will relate to that, but they won't want to know about the stonemasons coming from Scotland in the 1790s. So you have to tailor it to the sense of the dramatic which every child has. My experience is tell stories like that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on sightseeing with kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Tony Pitch, author and tour guide, about sightseeing with kids.
I would think also, especially for parents taking their own children, figure out what your kids are interested in. If you have artistic kids, it may be the view from the top of Lombard Street in San Francisco or something. It's something connected to what they're interested in.
That's right. It helps me at the beginning when the parents say, my child really loves history. I can tell within a few minutes whether those children are going to be with me for all these hours, because when you've done so much, it's rather like an actor before an audience. I'm sure that the actors can size up the audience within seconds or minutes. It's the same with a tour guide. If your jokes fall flat or if they're accepted, you get a sense of where you are. Now, with children, they're much more critical than adults, and they show it. Children are not afraid to show their feelings. And so this is an indication of whether you're going down the right path or whether you're beginning to tire them. They're very honest with their feelings and very critical. And I welcome that because that keeps me alert all the time.
Tony, what have you learned after taking groups on tours over all these years?
I've learned that I learn from the people I'm with. It's very, very seldom that I come away from an individual or a family or a large group without having learned something new. It's a two-way thing, this. I'm telling them things, but often they will say, oh, for instance, I'll give you an example. I was showing some people the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, and the father of these kids said, when I was talking about Martin Luther King addressing the crowds at his famous speech, I Have a Dream, and the father said, I was there. And I said to him, what do you do for a profession? He said, I'm a lawyer. He was a white lawyer. And I said to him, how many white people were in the audience? He said, you're going to be surprised, but there were more whites than blacks. So I learned from him a significant detail like that. And all the enthusiasm that he brought from having been there washed over me, which I could now pass on to others. So you're always learning from the people you're with. If you go with an open mind and an open heart, as I often tell people when we go to the memorials, it's such a wonderful experience to go to the memorials in Washington, the Lincoln Memorial, Jefferson Memorial, Vietnam Veterans Memorial, World War II, Roosevelt, because you see the best of human nature. It reminds me of airport arrival rooms. You know the way people run up and hug and kiss friends and family and kids and things like that? You see the same at the memorials, particularly the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, where people leave mementos at the base of the panel in that wall where the name of the friend or relative is etched. This is their way of relating to the dead, the only way they can relate. And so you see raw emotion in the same way you see it at airports. So I tell the children a lot, come with an open mind, come with an open heart, and be receptive. Take in your feelings. Don't be afraid to tear up when you have to or to laugh when you feel like laughing, because that's what touring is all about. It's an emotional reaction to a new place, a place you haven't been before, and if you're really affected, it's going to show in your feelings. And so this is what I tell them, react emotionally, because then you'll carry it with you for life. Often I take around parents, and they say, you know, I remember a little bit of this when I came as a child on a field trip when I was at grade school. And I say to them, do you remember much? And they said, well, most of it is a blur, but I do remember the Lincoln sitting there on his chair, and I was at the Lincoln Memorial, and I was wondering how tall he would be if he stood up. So these things are carried through into later life.
It's interesting. What I was thinking when you were saying this was that what parents are doing by taking their children is building shared memories together.
Yes, that's
so
right.
That not only will the children be remembering wherever it is that they're touring, but they'll remember the connection with their parents.
That's right.
Doing that. It almost reminds me of when a child is pre-reading and the child's experience of books is sitting in a loved one's lap looking at a book. It's a shared memory, but it's warm and fuzzy because of the situation.
That's a very good analogy. Those same children will become parents one day, and they will reflect on those warm memories of being with their parents at the same site, and they'll pass it on because they experienced the love and the joy and everything, and they will pass it on. It's a learning experience which will be carried over for life.
The it's good touring, for the tourism industry, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, there's so much more to tourism than just saying this was built in 1848 and it's 6 feet high and the stone comes from Georgia. Those are dull facts. They're really dull, and they shouldn't be used by people who are trying to hold the children's attention. They relate to stories. And the kind of things you've said, the stories that you've told the parents, those kind of things are handed down as a shared legacy. That's what it's all about.
Well, you've given us an awful lot to think about. Are there any resources that you would like to suggest for our listeners who would like to now pick up on this and find things that they can do when they take their children to other places?
My website is www.dcsightseeing.com. dcsightseeing.com. Children's books, obviously. The Convention and Visitor Association of every large city or the Chamber of Commerce will have material on those cities and the highlights to see in those cities and possibly a tour guide to hire.
Well, this has been a wonderful session, and Tony Pitch, you have given us an awful lot to think about and to work on when we take children to sightseeing in various places. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 358 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing and distributing Parents Perspective programs. Parents Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your checks or money orders to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015. And thank you for helping us continue to work for you. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.